is quiet on this remote little planet. The stars shine in the night sky, and all is still and peaceful. But wait, what's that racket? It's made this Clumby come out of his hole and investigate. That's right, Clumby, be careful. There's no telling what that is. The others have heard it too, and now they're all curious about what it is. Don't touch it. Perhaps it's been stunned by the fall. That's it, Clumby. Poke at it with a stick. Perhaps it's dead. Or maybe hungry. That's it. Be careful. Lift it onto a ledge so that all the Clumbies can see. It doesn't seem to want any food. Maybe it's angry with us and sullen, and that's why it's silent. A very brave Clumby decides to touch the stranger. What's that? Oh, it's clearly a radio. Oh, my. Oh, wait, Clumbies. It's clearly a radio. Why are you still trying to feed it? Can you not hear me? You've mistaken a radio, a piece of space junk that's landed on your planet, for a sentient being, and you're ascribing all sorts of motives and emotions to it that aren't true. Oh, for God's sake, Clumbies, it's just a bloody radio. Just listen to it. Oh, my word, Clumbies. No, not water, Clumbies. Ow, Clumbies, scoff.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Y. I'm Hardy Y. I can hardly believe it. I wake up every day and I say, I'm Hardy Y. How'd that happen? I get to be with friends on the radio. And you're my friend. Let's visit now. Let's be a little island in time. Or outside of time.
Hey, Uncle Hardy, read me a bedtime story.
Oh, I'd love to, nephew, but I was just about to visit with my radio friends.
Well, why can't you do both?
Oh, I guess I could. I could kill two birds with one stone.
What? That's awful. What does that mean?
Oh, it means I take my stone and I smash the brains of the one bird, and then I could wait up to maybe 5 years, kill another bird with it, because it's my bird-killing stone.
Uncle Hardy!
Oh, I'm kidding you. It means that one action can have more than one purpose. So I'll tell you a story, and then my radio friends can enjoy the same story. So what kind of story you like me to tell?
Well, I like it when you pretend to be Peter Falk, and I'm Jack Cassidy, and I'm smugly confident that you're unaware of my guilt. And then just as you're leaving, you say, oh, one more thing, and you come back and read me Princess Bride.
No, I'd rather read you one of my stories or tell you one that I like.
Oh, all right.
Well, why do you like me to read a bedtime story to you anyway?
Well, it makes me feel safe.
Oh, why is that?
Because I figure if something broke in to the house and was trying to kill us, it would attack you first, and I'd have time to either get away or make some kind of alliance with the monster.
All right, well, that makes sense. I don't mind telling you a story.
All right.
Well, you just relax then. Oh, and hello, radio friends. A bedtime story can make you feel safe, can't it? Oh, we all need to feel safe for a little bit. Don't we? To recharge our batteries, we gotta be safe. All animals like to do that, curl up in a little hidey hole like that. So they feel like the whole world's being shut out. You have to do that. So curl up under your covers, unless you're driving a cab. Then don't. But you can sort of do it in your mind anyway. Go to your little safe place in bed. Imagine when you were a child. Unless your childhood was horrible. Then we'll start all over again as adults, and Uncle Hardy will take care of you. Oh, bless you. I love you. I require nothing of you. It's just all I want is that you pretend to enjoy what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't really listen to the content. For me, it's more like white noise. You're like running water or something.
All right.
You could be saying anything.
Okay, now, thank you. So I will tell you a story. I like to make up my own stories. I think the kids love that. They say, Uncle Hardy, make up a story.
I have never said that.
Okay, well, the other children do.
What other children?
You know, you just be concerned. You do you, nephew. All right, so here it goes. Once upon a time...
You're not reading.
It's in my head. All right? I'm writing the story as I go along. Here's the thing. Your brain works faster than sound. So really, there's a delay. People say, oh, how do you think of something like that and then say it that quickly? I'll tell you what. Here's the secret, friends. There is a delay between thinking and the sound coming out of your mouth of like, I think it's like an hour. So it gives me plenty of time to come up with something, organize it. A lot of times I'll plot out the story structure on 3x5 cards in my head. They're not really literally cards. I think they're just cells or something like that, neurons. But I will pin them up on a board anyway. I can hear them scream as I stick the little pins in them. And then I come up with a story. So here you go. The theme is going to be giants.
Giants?
Giants.
Giants?
Giants. Why giants? I think because we're very scared of things that are big like that, giant things, but we're not so scared of tiny little things like brown recluse spiders or earwigs or malicious nanobots or something like that that can get up in your urinary tract and take over your mind. But giants, in fact, are frightening because we're almost helpless against giants. Could you imagine that, being a little tiny mouse and living in a house, and people are giants to you because of relative size. And say, oh, I'm going to crawl back in my hole and sit at my little table that's made out of a spool. Everything I have, I've stolen from the giants. Hey, maybe that's why they don't like me. But anyway, once upon a time, a little boy was walking down a road, and all of a sudden in front of him was a giant. He became terrified. Don't hurt me, giant. And the little boy took out his slingshot, and he shot a rock up into the giant and hit him in the eye. And it put the giant's eye out. The giant's eye came rolling out of the socket and fell to the ground. But the giant started to laugh. And when he laughed, he plucked out his other eye and ate it. And scrunched it down just like it was a grape. One of those big, fat, what do you call it? Muscovy, what are the big ones that make the wine that you don't want to drink? Muscadine? Muscadine? Am I saying the right thing?
I've totally forgotten what the story is about.
Oh, giant ate his eyeball.
Oh, right. Thank you for that image.
So the giant's standing there, laughing with empty eye sockets. And all of a sudden, the little boy sees in the eye sockets... It looks like little balloons start to inflate. And new eyes pop into the giant's head. And the giant starts laughing and saying, ha, 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 I regularly auto-cannibalize because everything on me grows back. I regenerate as if I were the tail of a lizard or something like that. I regenerate as if I were the retina of a zebrafish.
All right, throw a little science in there.
I'm trying to. And he said, sometimes I take off my ears and make castanets out of them. But they're flesh castanets. And so they're not very loud. The giant continued to laugh. And the little boy said, are you going to harm me? And the giant says, well, why would I harm you? I'm just walking along the street. First of all, you're the one who shot my eye out without any provocation. And the little boy said, I'm sorry. It's just that I'm so scared of giants. I thought you were going to kill me. And I thought maybe I could sort of nip that in the bud by killing you first. Giant said, I never thought of that. But now that I know you're a menace, I suppose I should crush you under my foot. Wait, said little boy. Maybe we could work something out here. Let's be partners. And the giant put his hand down, and the little boy stepped in his hand, and the giant brought the little boy up to his face and says, partners, you say? Well, what is it that you can offer me? And the little boy thought for a while, and he said, well, isn't it always good to have some kind of tiny little spy? Maybe you can slip me into the pocket of some other giant that you're trying to steal some sort of corporate proprietary information from. I don't know what you do. Are you one of those giants that sells vegetables? I am not, said the giant. In fact, I may be the only giant. I haven't seen any around here. I live up in the hills because I can't find any other giants, and I'm scared of y'all. Scared of us? Yeah, I'm scared of you. I may be tall, but I'm the only giant. And so it's y'all who frighten me. How about that? Well, let's be partners, said the little boy, and maybe we can educate all my people. So the little boy brought the giant into the village, where, without any provocation, the giant was attacked and killed by the villagers. Chapter 2. When the little boy grew up, he became the arch-chancellor of Miraculable, and Miraculable was the town that he was from. As arch-chancellor, he had...
What are you saying? You said chandler.
I meant chancellor.
Arch-chancellor?
Yes.
Of a town?
This is a fairy tale, nephew, so I don't feel like I gotta be super accurate. I'm just going along.
Now, why'd they kill him?
Fear.
Well, there's no repercussions?
No, he's the only one, so there was nobody to stand up for him.
What about the little boy?
Oh, I guess he jumped off of the shoulder at some point. Saved himself, because he's now arch-chandler. Do you want to hear?
You said chandler again.
Why do I keep saying that? Chancellor. So the little boy was in charge of the village, and he thought to himself, if there's ever another giant, we're not going to do that again. But how do I know if there's other giants? Perhaps I should go and search for them, see if he had any relatives. Because when the giant did die, he left one possession.
I thought he could regenerate.
He's destroyed. He was completely destroyed. Then you can't regenerate. If you crush a lizard, the fact that he can regenerate his tail is beside the point. He's been obliterated.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, okay. So he's not immortal or anything.
Oh, I got the wrong impression.
So the little boy went up into the mountains looking for the other giants, trying to make things right, saying, I'm sorry my people have been so wrong to you. And he looked around and looked around and said, how am I going to find a giant? That's like finding a telephone pole in a piece of hay. And so he finally found some footprints.
You almost said footsteps.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
That's because, what do you call it, when you hear sounds and...
Synesthesia?
Yeah, synesthesia. So I think when I see a footprint, I hear clump, 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 clump. I hear sound effects. This happens. This is from being on radio, too, you know, because...
You're on radio, too?
Yeah, they don't want to put me on Radio 1 because I'm not popular. So they put me on Radio 2. But you think in Foley. You think in sound effects. I always do. When I hear thunder or something, I'll say, stop rattling that large piece of metal like that. Or if I hear a fire, I'll say, stop crackling up paper. I was taught that at a very young age. I remember I had an aunt, and we were playing with a tape recorder. And she goes, hey, let's pretend there's a fire. And I said, well, what's burning that paper? It just sounds like paper. And she's like, use your imagination. Paper? I'll buy that it's burning paper. She goes, come on now. And then pour water on it. I go, I don't know. It's not cutting it. Real fire. Did you ever hold a microphone up to real fire? It doesn't sound like you think it's going to sound. Sometimes fake sounds are more real than the real thing. Everybody knows that, and Foley artists know that.
Why are you calling them artists?
Because bless them. Everybody, isn't everyone an artist in a way?
No.
I know. So where was I?
Well, they were looking for the giants, and they found a footstep / footprint.
Right. So they found this footprint, and the little boy said, there must be other giants. But there weren't. Chapter 3. The arch-chancellor dies. And he lies in state. And they put him in a glass coffin in the middle of town. And everybody comes by and looks at him. And the last person in line is a lone eyeball rolling around, and the eyeball bounces itself up and on top of the coffin. And everyone's shocked. It's a giant eyeball. It's a big old eyeball. It looks like it's not quite, it's the size of one of those medicine balls, but perhaps overinflated. It's bigger than a bowling ball and a basketball, but smaller than, say, a stability ball. It's hard to say, really, the size of it.
How many, what was the diameter?
Which is diameter, all the way across, or is that radius? Anyway, giant eyeball jumps up in there, and the eyeball looks around at all the people, and they feel accused by it. It's not even saying anything, and they go, oh, I think we know what's going on. I think this is the eyeball of the giant, and it's looking at us, and it's saying, shame, shame. Why are you ignoring the consequences of your actions, giant killers? You never asked whether that giant was there to help you or not. You were just so consumed with fear that you thought you knew. Now, all these fairy tales, a lot of them have to do with fear, getting people wrong and everything like that. And we need to work those out as children so we don't grow up to be horrid, horrid people like your father.
Don't bring my father into this.
Yeah, but he's a very bad man. My brother Hale is my evil twin. I don't mention him much because of that, but I'm very close to his family, who are weirdly not evil.
Well, I feel sometimes inclined.
We all do. We all do. There's more than one us. We all have that violence inside. Say, oh, I don't want to have it. Well, you know, just you have to keep on it then. What you have to do is feed it little calming biscuits.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Find your own calming biscuit. Sometimes, for me, it's walking, taking contemplative walks, and acting as if I'm older than I am.
What do you mean?
Well, sometimes I'll be walking out in the world, and I will feel frustrated and angry, and I will feel the sting, the prick of injustice. I know. And I'll get so angry, and I'll think, I'm still a young man, I'm gonna lash out in violence, I'm gonna get a bunch of muscles, and I'm gonna become a superhero, and I'm gonna go punch all the enemy and everything. And it gets me all riled up, and I can't think anymore. I go, no, that's not the me that makes the good decisions. Me that makes the good decisions is the old wrinkly kung fu master who's 150 years old. So I'll walk down the sidewalk with my hands behind my back, clasped like that, like I'm an old man, kind of stooped over and walking, and say, I'm going to make myself vulnerable. I'm going to make myself frail. I'm going to encounter the world that way. That way, I will be forced to use my wisdom and my intellect. I have purposely hobbled myself by saying, I shall not use violence. I will not use anger to convince. I'm going to be just like those characters in stories that made me so excited. Who is that mysterious wizard with the long beard? See, he can't even chin up. He can't do a pull-up. All right? But he can convince people to do the right thing. Why? Because they look at him and they say, how is it that you have conquered those inner demons? You must secretly be very strong. Because inner demons and the demons of violence and the demons of revenge are stronger than any strong man, stronger than any Hercules type. I was at the grocery store the other day and I saw a big man. He's got old rippling muscles and everything. And the first thing I thought is, boy, if I ever drop anything heavy, he's going to be the guy that could pick it up for me. That's all. Other than that, I couldn't see how he could possibly be living his life any different. I can pick up a coffee cup. I'm strong enough to do that. I can pick up a hint. Don't have to be strong at all to do that. I can pick up on people's insecurities. I can pick up on people's fears. And I think if I had a lot of muscles, I might depend on them and not the thing that's picking up those other things.
I'm not liking this story.
I'm sorry.
I think you're pontificating.
Oh.
Why can't you just say the story? And if it's an allegory or something, it will speak for itself. Try doing a classic.
All right. That's a good idea. I will do a classic.
How about if you want to do a giant, do Jack and the Bean Killer.
Jack and the It's either Jack and the Beanstalk or Jack the Giant Killer.
Whatever.
All right, I'll do that one. Once upon a time, there was a boy living with his mother, and they were very poor. Their only possession was a donkey and a house and a table, and they had some books and bowls, and the mother had a beautiful set of cooking pots and everything that she inherited. They had a rug. They weren't doing too bad, you know, but what the problem was is they had no steady income because the boy's father had died.
Your father has died.
Are you going to be the mom?
No, go ahead, you tell it.
Okay, your father has died. And we have no income. I don't mean to involve you in family finances. I wish that you could live the life of a normal little boy and just be safe in bed and not have to worry about these things. I'm so sorry. But we've got trouble. And I'm going to need you to sell the donkey. So the little boy took the donkey into town to sell it. When he did, he encountered a man wearing a top hat and tails, and the man said, "Hey, what you got there?" And the boy says, "I got a donkey. I got to bring it into town to sell it because my father died and we don't have no income." "Well, I think I got your problem solved," said the man. A donkey won't pay for it.
What?
Would you be willing to trade your donkey for the possibility of having great wealth?"
"Well, yes."
"All right, then. Now, I'm not promising you great wealth. I'm promising you the opportunity for great wealth."
"All right."
"In the form of magic beans." So the little boy said, "Well, that doesn't sound like a great deal." He said, "Oh, you have no idea. Go home and plant these magic beans and you will see." And so the boy traded the donkey and he had the magic beans and he felt very confident. And he went home to his mother and he said, "How would you like to have a fortune?" And the mother was very excited. She goes, "What'd you get for the donkey?" And he said, "These beans." And she looked at him, and she looked at him stunned. And they stood there for an hour and 45 minutes, speechless, before she slapped the beans from his hand. They went flying out the window. "You idiot. You idiot. That was the last resource we had. You spent all our capital and what? For beans. For bupkis.
What's bupkis?"
"Beans." And so the little boy was very sad that he had let down his mother. And he was very sad that his mother was angry with him and didn't trust him. "I'll show her. I'm going to do something. I'm going to make this right." Well, the next day, the little boy went out, and he seen that the beans had sprouted. That gives me an idea. The little boy and his mother had a neighbor. The neighbor was a lady who didn't come out very much because she was very tall, and they called her the Giantess of Beanland. That's where they lived, by the way. And the Giantess lived in her house, and she was very reclusive because she was often teased by the children. And she was a very sensitive person, and she didn't want to be teased by the children. She lived there in the house with her pet goose. Now, this goose was wonderful because it laid eggs, and she was able to sell the goose eggs and make enough of a living to keep herself fed and warm and in this house. So she lived there with the goose. Now, Jack was standing under her window one time, and he thought, "If I could get up there, perhaps there's that stupid old woman, giant woman that lives there. Maybe I could get that goose, and that goose lays eggs, and we could sell them." So one night, Jack waited until the lights were off in her house, and then he snuck over to the trellis, and he crawled up to the window. "Don't make any sound," he thought. And he snuck into the living room, and he saw the goose in its cage. Oh, it was a lovely cage, though, because the giantess loved that goose. It was like her only family. Really, she had no family. And so, to her, it was like more than a pet, really. Not only did it provide her income, but it was something she loved dearly. Jack was very, very quiet as he opened the cage. He grabbed the goose by the neck so it couldn't holler. And he shoved it into a burlap sack and tied it shut. And just as he was sneaking out, the light came on. "Who's in my house?" said the giantess. "Who's in here?" Jack was very quiet. He hid behind a piece of furniture. "Goose, are you okay?" The giantess went to the cage of the goose and saw it was empty.
"No! My goose! Where are you, my love? Where are you?"
And she fell to her knees and began to sob, not because her income was gone, but because she loved her goose so much. It was the only one who loved her back. And Jack saw this, and he thought, "I got to get out of here before that freak catches me." And so he made a run for it. "Who is that? Who is that?" And he ran, and she said, "Bring back my goose, please, please. It's all I have." And he ran out the window and started down the trellis. And the giantess lunged to grab it, and she fell out the window, and she plummeted to her death, and cracked her skull open on the ground. Jack saw this and said, "Oh boy, I better get out of here." And so he ran home to his mother. The next day, his mother woke up and said, "Oh, did you hear what happened? It seems like our neighbor died last night. I think she committed suicide or something." "Is that a fact?" said Jack. "Well, guess what I did? I took those beans that you threw and I traded them for a goose. So now we have a goose that could lay eggs and we can sell the eggs and have income." "Oh, Jack, I'm so proud of you." And the mother threw her arms around the boy and hugged him and kissed him. And Jack knew that he had done the right thing.
"That is horrible."
"Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, I think what happens here is that we'd see the giant as a freak and see Jack as a hero, and it's really more subtle than that."
"It doesn't seem subtle at all. He seems like a psychopath, and she seems like a sweet lady."
"Well, you know, life, you got to accept these things, don't you?"
"No, that's not justice."
"Oh, you can't trick a little boy who's going to sleep, can you? He knows the difference. You can't trick a little girl going to sleep. She knows the difference, what's just and unjust. We know it when we're young, and we either get it slapped out of us or we carry it into adulthood where we feel absolutely powerless to do anything about it." "I love to get together and read to you, friends. Oh, my goodness. You know, if I could give you a little... You've upset my heart." "Okay, well, I'm going to take care of that." Hardy never does something. This is like Cat in a Hat in a way. I come into your house. I open a box. Out of the box, all your fears and all the things that disgust and confuse you emerge. And they say, "There can't be a reason for this." And I say, "Well, there isn't. I apologize. Could you help me get everything back in?" And you do, and we cooperate. And then you realize that it takes all of us to undo some of these bad mistakes that we make. "I need your help. Always, friends, we need helpers. I need more friends than enemies. I need more friends than enemies. And they come in all different shapes and sizes. If I just went around looking for people who looked like me to help me, oh, I don't think I'd find the helpmates I need." I like movies where people are assembling some sort of cast of characters to carry out a mission. Now you say, "Oh, Mission Impossible, first thing I think of." Yes, exactly. So when Mr. Hoo-Ha, it was two different guys, I can't remember, has a mission, impossible, they get out their magazine covers and they say, "These are the different people I need. No one person is going to be able to do this mission. I need a combination of experts.
This person is an expert in munitions. LeBeau is an expert in French food. Roland Hand can put on a plastic mask and people think it's his actual face. Kinchlow, radio. After the war, Kinchlow had a wonderful popular radio show. Hello, this is Kinchlow. I'm broadcasting from below Stalag 13 here in beautiful Nazi Germany. Today we're going to be featuring some of the great sounds of the 30s and 20s. And I would like, we're going to Maurice Chevalier singing Valentina.
Valentina, Valentina, I like you, but now you're fat and old. Valentina, Valentina, sexist and horrible, and no one understands the words.
Boy, if people knew French, they would that song, awful. But people don't. Isn't that wonderful? French is like code. So many, I think ignorance is wonderful in a way, because it makes foreign languages into secret codes. It's like their ubby-dubby speak. So what are you speaking over there? Crazy? People always do that. Say, you're in this country. Stop. What language are you speaking? English with an accent? Well, stop it. I can't understand you. Sorry. So people bring somebody over from Scotland or something and say, you're in the United States now. Speak English. Scottish person pokes your eyes out, which is, of course, the proper reaction to that. I think that I don't know. My ancestors come from all sorts of places all over Scotland. So I don't know what they would. Now they're here and they brought nothing to the old country, not even a bolt of fabric. That's what I was hoped they would bring. I have nothing. I have no inheritance from those people that came over to this country hundreds of years ago. They didn't leave me anything. Isn't that terrible? A book or something. Some connection. I don't know what y'all were all even about. I feel no connection to you. I feel more connection to my neighbor. And they're from Morocco. Oh, I love my neighbors. I sort of know them, some of them. But I love them because they haven't done anything to me yet. So I'm going to start there. You know, there's no point in hating somebody before the fact. Is there?
No, I don't think so.
Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes things come blurting out of our mouths. Freud says there's a reason for this. He said, you don't just make a mistake. He said, you make a mistake for a reason. You know, it's not just a slip of the tongue. It's, you secretly got something else on your impending war. I mean, on your mind. So it just pops out. There are things in your brain. Oh, little house. Your brain's like a house. And I would love for you someday, try a Sunday. Why a Sunday? Because Sunday's when they have open houses. Did you ever walk through a neighborhood? You go, oh, they're having an open house. I'm not in the market for a house, but I'd like to go in. Why? Because I want to see how other people are living. Why? Because most of the things that torment me and most of my confusion comes from the fact that I think maybe my neighbor has it better than me. That maybe my neighbor has something I don't have. And that makes me angry and jealous. I don't say I'm angry and jealous. I say that I don't like them for another reason. I say that, it's because you don't believe what I believe or something. So I want to go into that house and see how like or unlike we are. And so I'll go into those open houses. And the immediate, where do I go first? To the safe. And I'll open the safe first and go in there. And what's in there? In this particular house, loads and loads of unreleased Prince songs. So I don't know where I am or how they got there. No, I just walk around and see what other people have in their house. See what they value. See what brings them peace. You know, this is their secure little place. What makes them feel secure? Oh, wallpaper. That wouldn't, not for me. You know, a lot of people like a certain order makes them feel better and everything. Their grand dining room, which is usually about 6 feet by 9 feet.
and all sorts of things like that you get to see in people's houses, the open house. But you need to have an open house in your mind. Why? Because I tell you, there are things living in rooms that you're not aware of, and you got to go in there and face them, because they're in there. And there's little people in rooms in your house, and they've got little typewriters, and they're up to stuff, and they're asking you to do things. So much of our unconscious mind is making the decisions, and we're just going along, and we're either doing one of two things. We're questioning the decisions, or we're making excuses for them. You know? So I hate to tell you this. I believe do I believe in free will? I don't. That's a nonsensical question. I will tell you this, though. Your body, you know this, your body makes a lot of decisions. And then you go, why am I doing this? That's the little separation there. And you can either veto that action and question it, or you can, after the fact, come up with some excuse why you did it. And that's a lot of times what we do, is come up with some excuse afterwards why we're doing things. Why we are told to love one another. And we are told by our ancestors to love your neighbor. This is a rule everybody knows. Oh, a golden rule. A lot of religions have it. A lot of philosophies have it. Treat others the way you want to be treated. And everybody knows it. And everybody's been told it. But they all find an excuse to not do it when they don't treat others that way. And they say, oh, yes, but. Yes, but. Look at your butt. Your butt is getting bigger every day. Oh, every time you say yes, but more goes into your big butt bag. Now your butt's so big it's dragging on the ground. You're just a big butt with a tiny little head. Your head looks like a raisin on a loaf of bread. The bread is your butt. The raisin was your brain. And eventually a boy comes along and flicks the raisin off the bread with his finger, and you're just a butt. Boom. You don't want to be just a giant disembodied butt. So stop making excuses. Oh, it's hard to be brave. How are you going to stand up in a room full of people who think you are your only allies and say, oh, hold on. But you know what? I know somebody. I have a role model, and his name is Don Bourgeoisie. That's Bourgeois hyphen Z. It's Dutch. And he says, question, like that, all the time. We'll be in a group, and Don will go, question. And the reason he does is because he loves us, but he's also thinking, hey, I got some questions. I have a very loving grandmother that lives in my head still. And she gave me some very important rules. And sometimes I feel like I'm putting a gag around old Granny. What is that, Granny? That's all right. Come on, I need to take care of things. Don't do that. Is this part of the story? Oh, I'm sorry. You're not asleep yet? How am I going to sleep with you clapping like an idiot? That is a very good point. But sometimes I just get full of joy. Why is that? Because I know I'm talking to other human beings. And if I knew I was talking to other human beings, there was a lot out there, I would say this. We could solve all our problems if you just, for a moment, knew that you were loved. So just calm down, and all the people. Now, I would like to say this. Sometimes, if you feel like you're afraid of the people around you that love you, accept you, that there's something that you could do or say where they would reject you or cast you out, rethink your group. Not all groups of people are like that. You know, when Don says, question, we never cast him out. We always have all sorts of diverse opinions in our group. People questioning what we're doing. That doesn't make us wishy-washy. Oh, no. Ah, I tell you, I say this all the time, but I was brainwashed when I was young by these ideas. And I know that I'm an idiot now. I know that I'm a fool. I'm inarticulate. I know that I have a thick tongue and a slow intellect. I have no right as an idiot speaking to all of you who are intelligent and bright. Oh, I am so humbled that you would listen to me for a mere second. But I must say this to you, my friends, my brothers and sisters. Oh, I fear that when we harm those who cannot fend for themselves, when we harm the innocent, when we strike before looking, when we mock, when we bully, that we don't know what we're doing all the time, that you are causing a great harm, and I don't know why, but I beg of you, please, imagine if that were you. We don't want that. There are those who can accept you without being that bully. You don't have to do that. You don't have to go against what you know is deep down in your heart. So, I've been injured. I'm angry. I started off like that, Hardy, when I was young. I started off as an innocent young child. And I had all those things in my heart. And my granny said be good to those. But then I met people and they disgusted me and they turned on me. What am I supposed to think? Well, I ain't one. And if I'm here, and I'm clearly not one of those people, I'm clearly more like your granny, and I'm on the radio, okay, and only one in thousands and thousands of people are on the radio, then don't you think there's thousands and thousands and ten thousands and hundred thousands and maybe even millions of people like me who would accept you without that hatred in your heart? And we're not crazy. And we're good, and we're smart, and we're kind, and we get things done. And you don't have to feel that way. Come on. I'll help you search out the group that will take that burden away from you. That hatred's going to eat your heart. Oh, it's going to eat it. And you are not a giant who can auto-cannibalize. You cannot pop out your eyes and eat it and grow another eye. As you eat away at yourself and eat away at your heart, it doesn't come back. It's gone forever. And gosh, it might taste good, like Homer Simpson when his head was a donut and he was eating his own. And Marge said, don't pick at your head. And Homer says, yeah, but I'm so tasty. Oh, it'll be gone soon. Just even one little Jimmy. Is that what you call him? What? Those little candy things you put on ice cream. I would grow up calling them Jimmies. I don't know, man. Jimmy. And you know those novelty ice cream things on a stick? Uh-huh. My mama called them chocolate picks. Chocolate picks? Anybody else call them chocolate picks? Anybody? 50,000 New Jersey hands go up. I don't know. Maybe it's just me and my family. We do things differently. But see, we're not all that different. Don't you want us, wandering in the wilderness, what if you were the giant and people looked at you and they were afraid of you instantly just because of your size and they wanted to destroy you and they felt no guilt when they stole the things that you love, when they stole your goose, when they stole your livelihood. They don't care because they saw you as something wholly other. You don't want to be that. And don't do that to other people. I always visit my nephew at night.
Yeah, why is that?
So I can read you a bedtime story. I've designed it like that. I love to interact with you this way.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I'm thinking of this. You know, I could make excuses and say, oh, I'll see him then, I'll see him here and everything like that. But I would rather be here every day and have you be tired of me than to have something happen to one of us and regret that I didn't get to tell you that story one last time.
Oh, you're making me a little... You know, I love you.
I know.
But I just want to say, sometimes, and I hope I'm using this word right, I feel like you're a little... mawkish.
Mawkish?
Yeah, you know, overly emotional, kind of childish emotions.
Oh, yeah, no, I have that in me. Oh, I have everything in me like a nesting doll. Like Russian nesting dolls. There's a large one, which is a big lady in a babushka with no legs, just shaped like a bowling pin. And then you pop her head off, and there's other smaller ones in there. You know what that is? That's me at all the stages of my life, just like a tree and the growth rings. Oh, and the little baby is still in there, and the 5-year-old boy is still in there, and the 9-year-old boy is still in there. And then the 10-year-old boy is still in there, and now the 10-year-old boy is discovering the Ohio Players. How did that happen? On a K-Tel compilation, a Ronco compilation. And he hears it. He hears Funky Worm. Oh, Funky Worm. I wonder if I could recreate it. Let's see. Sorry, but you can go listen to it. I think Dr. Dre sampled it or something. Funky Worm, Ohio Players.
He's the funkiest worm in the world.
Oh, I was so excited at 10 to hear that song. Oh, when I was young, I still have all that in my heart, and it brings me joy. I can go back to 10-year-old me, and the things that I hear when I go back there is I hear Funky Worm. I hear J5. Love J5 so much here. ABC, I Want You Back. The Love You Save. Stop! The love you save may be your own. Right? It may. Oh, J5, full of so much wisdom, full of so much joy. And now I have that still in there. I'm not going to bury that up. Why would I bury that up? Well, what if you need to be fight, big, tough fighter? How are you going to fight with that little tiny boy still in there? That little tiny boy still has wisdom. It's going to keep me from doing something stupid, of making a terrible mistake. It's going to keep me from burning down my own house. Don't do that. I won't. Thank you, nephew. And I keep you in my life so I can keep my priorities straight. So I can keep myself sensitive to these things. So I can feel that, oh, when I see somebody pouring their heart out and the person listening is rolling their eyes, I know what's happened. You killed that little child in yourself, didn't you? And now you don't want to feel those things. You're so afraid. You're so afraid of shedding some tears and feeling helpless, out of control. You can't do the right thing. Oh, I'm sorry. We don't have to tell anybody. That's a great thing about our relationship. We don't have to tell anybody this is going on. Nobody knows that you are listening to me. Nobody knows that you and Hardy are friends. Nobody knows that secretly, you know, that you play tough all day, or you pretend to be an executive all day, or all day you pretend to be a politician. All day you pretend that you're going along with these other ones who are mocking and laughing and everything, but secretly you know something's wrong. You know why? Because you were loved. You were loved when you were little by somebody. It wasn't a completely loveless childhood. You know that. And if you let yourself feel that for a moment, you're afraid it's all going to come crushing down and you'll be destroyed. I tell you no. I tell you no. You will only gain this amazing suit of armor that doesn't inure you. All right? It doesn't keep the things from coming in. But when they do, it dissipates it and turns it into a righteous energy. It dissipates it and makes it into power. Oh, I take my grief and I make it into something else. I say, oh, I can only grieve for so long before I want to offer up some help to those who are even weaker. Because eventually my grief wears off a bit, and I can go in there and boil some eggs and I can bring some hard-boiled. I'm going to devil them. No, wait. I'm going to devil them first. I think they're going to appreciate that. I have had a loss, but I've had friends have had more recent losses. So I'm going to make some deviled eggs. I'm going to sprinkle some paprika on that, and I'm going to bring them over, and the eggs aren't going to bring back their loved ones. The eggs aren't going to unbreak their heart, but the eggs are going to say, Hardy is going to bear that with you. Come on, I'll pick it up too. We can all do it. If you want to do it alone, you want to get all the credit, I don't know what to tell you. But if you just want to get things done, then have helpers. Be part of a group. All right? You'll still get your reward. You'll get what you need. I guarantee it. Oh, my friends. The hour is not over yet, but it goes by so fast, doesn't it, nephew? Nephew? Are you asleep? You're faking. I'm faking. You're still awake, aren't you? Yeah, I am. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Could you tell a damn story? Because I feel like, again, you're pontificating a bit.
Okay.
I just want to hear like a crazy story. I love the eyeball eating.
All right.
Something like that again, man. You know, where maybe the giant's fingers fly off and they all become tiny little finger people. And on the face of their finger, where your fingerprint is a little face and a mouth going, "We are finger soldiers." And they all walk around like that, all little disembodied fingers.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, that's a start.
And then they become thieves because their fingers, you know how fingers pinch things.
All right.
And the finger thieves then retreat into a cave.
And then what?
You go.
All right. Then the giant says, I know what I'm going to do. I've had my fingers do this before. I'm going to take off my foot. And my foot is actually a little car, like a little hovercraft. And in the foot, I'm going to put the one finger that didn't run away, and that's Mr. Thumb. Mr. Thumb is very stable.
Yep.
And so this little thumb is driving this disembodied foot around like it's a hovercraft looking for the finger thieves. And he comes upon a cave with a big slab in front of it. And he goes, I know what this is because I have heard of the 1001 Arabian Nights. And in the 1001 Arabian Nights story, Scheherazade is telling a story about Aladdin and the 48 thieves.
48?
There was 48.
I say 40.
It's 40-ish. 40-ish thieves, but there's 48 of them.
All right.
And they're,
But they're fingers.
No. I'm just saying. So they get there and they think about the story of Aladdin. They go, you have to say a secret word to open up the cave. And so the thumb hopped out of the foot car and he goes up to the cave. And he sees, it says, on written on the cave, it says, says me. And so he goes, open, says me, like that. And nothing happens. And so he just stands there and he says, I wonder what the, and as he says that, I don't know which word it was, the stone rolls away and the cave opens up. And the thumb walks into the cave, and he looks around, and there is everything the fingers have ever laid their fingers on. All the jewels, all the gold is piled in there. Everything. Samovars. And he's thinking, that's why there's no Russian tea in town. Every damn samovar is in this cave. Why are they hoarding this stuff like that? And then he goes over, and he sees the fingers, and they're all dead. They're all dead because they sealed up the cave, didn't have no oxygen. They died, and they died on a pile of treasure. What's the point? What's the point? They've hoarded it, but now all the little fingers are dead. And the giant's thinking, oh, this is great, man. I've got no fingers. One of my thumbs is off having an adventure, and I'm left with one thumb. But you know what I can do with that? Thumbs up. It's going to be all right.
Not necessarily.
I know.
What are you, Dr. Pangloss?
No, I'm not Dr. Pangloss.
Everything works out for a reason.
Right, oh yes. The reason legs are stocking-shaped, therefore we have stockings. That's what Dr. Pangloss says.
That's from
Tell Candide.
All right. So Candide is walking through a field of disembodied limbs and gutted bodies after the Bulgarians have attacked. And he... No, let's not do... That's... Candide is not a bedtime story.
All right, whatever. Isn't there music, too?
Oh, what's his name? Wrote the... Dick Cavett.
Yeah, Dick Cavett wrote the theme to Candide. Very good, very good, whatever.
All right. Oh, my friends, I'm not going to say it's going to be all right. I don't say everything works out for a reason. Oh, sometimes they don't, and it's all very confusing. What I am saying is I think I have discovered a way around all that. I think I have discovered a way to cope with all that confusion and all that fear, and that's each other. Oh, I think back to when I was loved as a young person, and nothing was required of me. My mother, my grandmother never asked what I believed. They never asked what my allegiances were. They didn't ask my politics or religion. I was fed every night and I was held every night. And they rubbed my forehead when I was sick. And they helped me. And when I wet my pants, my grandmother would change my pants and she'd powder me up. And she'd say, "That's going to be all right." She never made fun of me. Oh, my friends, we won't be that for each other. You won't be that for yourself. Oh, do not fall into that pit of despair. Say, "I know if Hardy is out there, then there's 100 Hardys. There's 1,000 Hardys. I am nobody at all." Hey, Hardy, you got any celebrity friends? No. Why? I don't know. I just don't. I don't know. I live in Lexington, Kentucky, in a little neighborhood. I don't really leave the house. I don't got no celebrity friends. Nobody really knows me. I'm just an ordinary person. I have ordinary jobs. I've never done anything more. The most responsibility I've ever had in my life was being a clerk at a cheese shop. Because, you know, you give somebody the wrong cheese, it could hurt them or whatever. You give somebody a cow cheese when they're lactose intolerant, and not a goat cheese, then there's going to be trouble. Or sheep cheese, okay? Roquefort sheep. That's sheep milk. Ewe's milk.
Whose milk?
Ewe's. It's ewe's milk. All right, friends. Oh, it's so good to be with you. I hope I've given you something you can use or helped you pass the time or made you feel safe for a minute. Because I'm nobody, too. And it's only all that stuff outside that makes me feel like that's bad. I don't got to be somebody. I don't got to be the king of anything to love and to help. I don't have to be a celebrity to make a difference in lives. Someday I'll disappear. When I leave the radio waves and you'll never hear me again, it won't be like, "Oh, he's in movies." No, you'll never hear from me again. I'll disappear. You'll wonder whatever happened to, but you won't have a chance of finding out because Richard Lamparsky's not doing that anymore. You'll never, ever know. And all that will be left is the information. And I don't mind because I don't need anything because I'm going to die eventually. I'm going to go back to the earth and I'm going to be nothing. I'm going to be compost. Oh, what matters is what's going on now. What matters is that we have peace and we have love and we have justice now, right now, this instant. Let's change it today. Oh, be brave, be courageous, and know that you need others, that no one is an island except the island man, and he's lonely. Oh, friends, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. And by some miracle, by some blessing, we are on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, of which you will hear in the future as being a center of many miracles, and online, WFMU.org. Oh, thank you for blessing me with your attention and for being my friend, and I will see you again next week.
I was standing
Listening to WFMU. This is Sinner's Crossroads, and we're going to be joined. We'll be joined in just a moment live with Kevin Nutt from Montgomery, Alabama. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the WFMU Marathon. This is Monica. Kevin will be joining us in just a moment. But in the meantime, we would love to hear from you. Get your pledges going now at 1-800-989-9368 or pledge online.
Friends, this is the Thunderbolt of the Middle West, Brother Joe May. I'm speaking for myself and all the gospel artists of Specialty Records in Hollywood, California. And when I say WDIA is as big as the biggest and bigger than most, you can believe me. WDIA at 1070 on your dial is your station. Want you to listen day and night. I'll be singing for you.
Oh, And you are tuned to the Center's Crossroads Gospel Broadcast. Here on listener-supported Freeform WFMU. My name is Kevin Nutt, and we were just listening to the Southern Stars. And the prodigal son is going to go home. On the Chess record label from 1952, the Southern Stars. And right before that, we heard the Cumberland River Singers. On the Deluxe record label from 1953, he's all the world to me, the Cumberland River Singers. And the Southern Stars getting us underway here this evening on Center's Crossroads on WFMU. Yeah, we have some great Jubilee-style gospel numbers for you. Songs from the golden age of gospel,